And welcome back. Figured that after Sunday night's, I guess Monday morning's podcast, that John and I would do another one. Joe Roderick here, joined alongside by John Marasek. And John, for the time being, we're just putting this under the Going Over page, and we're calling it Going Over Time. So
that's fine.
Yeah, that's what we're going with right now for the name of the wrestling podcast that you can find right here on InsideSTL.com. We should start off by thanking those of you that listened to the first one, and also thanking Andy Hanselman for helping us get set up, because as you can hear, John sounds a lot better than he did the other day. That was the number one issue, John, that people said audio issues were the biggest hindrance on the show.
Well, sorry about that. We're new to this, and it's different for me not to sit in front of a microphone in a studio.
Yeah, I enjoy it when our sound guy, when our technical guy calls me after we run through all the tests a few hours ago. I sent him pictures of what the setup looks like, and his response was, "I don't know how that's working, but it sounds 1,000 times better."
Whatever it takes, Joe, you're going to get it all taken care of. I trust in you.
Yeah, and so you're sounding good. Hopefully I'm sounding good, and here we go. First off, it was a seven-hour show that we watched on Sunday. Is there anything that you can think of that we might have missed from Sunday's show to at least touch on here?
I don't know. I think we pretty much hit at least on all of the high spots of the whole show. It's impossible to go over everything in a seven-hour show or even go through the entire weekend with the Hall of Fame and NXT. There's just so much going on. I mean, the only thing that I would say is that no matter what we all thought of the card and all that going into fantastic. And it's that way every year. The card, you can be down on the way it looks going into the darn thing, but I'm, for me at least, that I've watched one, the whole thing sucked. For the most part, good. Especially in 7 hours, you can't find anything good. You got a problem.
Right. But speaking of the Hall of Fame, we'll touch a little bit on NXT throughout the show here. As this is a recap of Raw and SmackDown. We're hoping to record it every Wednesday, get it to you on Thursday, and that way, kind of just something to listen to, and maybe if you missed, go over it. But from the Hall of Fame on Friday, that's the only thing I'm going to touch on. Give me your favorite speech that you heard from Friday night.
Jim Cornette was awesome. See, I grew up as a huge fan of Jim Crockett Promotions and the NWA in the early days of WCW. More so than the WWE because it was so readily available to TBS. And I just like it was more real than the cartoonish WWE. So to have Jim Cornette and the Rock and Roll Express out there, and even Diamond Dallas Page, who was with Scott Hall as the Diamond Stud the first few times that I saw him there, plus this time they did. Those two guys, those two groups being out there were fantastic. That was it for me going in.
I enjoyed DDP. I've actually interviewed him maybe three times on the air, and I've actually had conversations with him off the air as well. So I've had multiple conversations with him. I know how good of a guy he is, and I knew what that speech was going to be. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be on Friday night. The one I enjoyed the most, and this did come as a shock to me, was Beth Phoenix.
She was great.
Yeah, because I think, I looked at it and I'm like, she wasn't around long enough to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know why she's in the Hall of Fame. Maybe it's because she's now married to Edge. But she was so thankful and gave so many people credit and gave them their dues that I thought her speech overall was the absolute best of the night. So that was just some things I meant to touch on Sunday and forgot to. So here we go. Raw from April 3rd, SmackDown from April 4th, your Monday and Tuesday nights from the past week. We knew that the crowd was going to be hot as they were still in Orlando. You still had the Hall of Fame crowd there for not one night, but both nights this time. And I cannot remember a better start to Monday Night Raw than what we saw this 2 days ago.
It was masterful. I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that. A guy comes out, he stands there for 10 minutes. That's all he did. He didn't do anything. He stood there for 10 minutes, said one sentence, and left. And it was as impactful a moment Roman Reigns has had in his entire very brief young career in WWE. It was just to stand there and let the crowd just do it. I don't know if that was the plan, but it worked. It had to work out better than they could have even expected.
That was my takeaway, was letting the crowd take over from the beginning. And I would imagine, I guess, the plan was to have Roman Reigns kick off the show, but to have the crowd chanting for Undertaker before it started, and then that slowly turning into a Roman sucks chant, and then the when they hit his music was just the absolute perfect time to hit his music. And you know what? Kudos to the WWE and USA for not editing the crowd mic or turning the crowd mic down, because it was clear as day yelling F you, Roman, and calling him an a-hole as well.
It was rough. It was really rough. God, it was perfect. I would love to know really what the plan was. Well, if that didn't happen, what was he supposed to do? Did he have like some long thing that he was going to have to fill with when he was looking like he was going to start talking? Or did he have a plan, or was it just going to be, let's hope this works, and you're just going to have to go off the top of your head if it doesn't? But it was perfect. It was awesome. I don't know that you could ever replicate something like that.
That's only something I think you could do the night after WrestleMania. And
yeah, you're probably right.
Maybe, if you remember, the past couple weeks on Raw, they had been promoting this WrestleMania. Where in years past, I think, you know, there might have been some anger behind the show being taken over. I think we all remember, was it Fandango in New York several years ago, mm-hmm. When that would have been WrestleMania 29. So five WrestleManias ago, the Fandangoing became a thing. And I really think that was kind of when they started realizing how big of a night this was for Raw. And they kind of promoted it. So maybe they were saying, like, hey, listen, to the 17,000 that are going to be there, we know you're going to be there. We want you to take it over. And maybe there was a little subliminal message in the commercials to promote Monday's show.
Yeah, they turned it into, it's as big as, not as big as WrestleMania, but it may be an even more fun show to go to as a fan than WrestleMania. If you haven't seen it on the WWE Network, they even did a special 1 hour, and God, their specials that they do, those 24 WWE specials on the network are amazing. They did one specifically on what the Raw after WrestleMania is like, and talking to the talent and showing highlights of crowds taking it over and big moments, and you know, showing like Enzo and Cass right before they went out there for their debut last year. In 2016, it is easily the best Raw every year. It is one that you could actually use the crowd and know they're actually going to be there. You're right about that. Now, if you had a choice, if somebody told you you could go and sit on the floor at Raw after Mania, or you could just get a seat into WrestleMania, what would you pick?
I'd probably pick Raw, because you know that they're. I mean, WrestleMania, I think we all knew what the results were a while ago. You kind of figured what was going to happen. For the Raw afterwards, you just don't know who's coming back or who might be debuting that night. So It does seem like a lot more fun. Maybe time-wise, though, you get a lot more wrestling on Sunday, though.
Yeah, but sitting in a stadium for like 9 hours, a long day.
Yeah. Moving on, the first match of the night had the Hardy Boys back out, taking on the Club, taking on Anderson and Gallows for a rematch, or I guess their title, or their, yeah, the Club's title rematch. And they gave the Hardys a special entrance after the commercial break, kind of welcoming them back to Raw. I thought maybe this would be a good time to introduce them as the characters they were at TNA, but from things I'm reading, I don't think we are going to see the broken Matt Hardy from TNA, which seems to make you wonder why they are bringing them back to begin with if they aren't going to play the characters that made them so popular and made you want to sign them.
Yeah, but they're bringing them back at a time when they are, first, you have the nostalgia act side of it, but you also have what they have done to build themselves up again in their career. They don't need to do that gimmick, I don't think. You've got the entire audience doing it for them. And for those who don't know, TNA or Anthem, who now owns Impact Wrestling, they own that character. And I know there have been legal battles back and forth to see who can do what, who's allowed to do what, but they don't have to do it. I don't know that it's that big a deal. And they've evolved enough that they could be an evolved group without having to do that exact same character. But that they're back because they, they the Hardys sell. They would sell if they were just the Hardy Boys from 10 years ago.
Yeah, if you go to Matt Hardy's Twitter, Matt Hardy Brand is what he is on Twitter. He has, it used to be his name on there, used to be Broken Matt Hardy. He has taken the broken off of it, so he is just Matt Hardy, but it's Matt Hardy hashtag delete. So they are still using the delete catchphrase. They are not using the broken catchphrase, I guess. So that
the name they own. Anthem owns the name, that, and they own Brother Nero. But I don't know that they own the catchphrase. I don't know if they can own delete?
The Brother Nero, because I do believe his name is, middle name is actually Nero, isn't it? Jeff Hardy's middle name, I think, is Nero. So that's not one they can really take away or own. And I just went to Jeff Hardy's Twitter. He is at Jeff Hardy Brand, and his name on there is hashtag Brother Nero, and then it says deleted.
It's beautiful. So you can get around these things in the world of wrestling. And when you've got an arena of 20,000 or 17,000 people doing it, you don't have to do it anymore.
Which, by the way, I noticed this. I can't remember if I texted you when I saw this last week, but I was watching TNA. The only reason I'm watching TNA is because of Bruce Pritchard's podcast.
You and a lot of people.
Yeah. But Cody Rhodes is now on there, Dusty Rhodes' son. And TNA, he is known by Cody, because WWE owns the name Cody Rhodes. That's not their real last name. Their real last name is Reynolds. But his wife, who is accompanying him to ringside, WWE never trademarked Brandi Rhodes when she was with WWE. So she is Brandi Rhodes. He is just Cody. He is not Cody Rhodes, but she is Brandi Rhodes.
Don't you love wrestling?
If that makes any sense at all. So the Hardys win, they retain their belts, and we could talk about what happens next with that in the next part, because after that match is over, we see Vince McMahon pull up in a long SUV and get out of the back seat, and he is coming down to the ring next for the next segment. He comes down to the ring, first tries to get sympathy for Stephanie McMahon, which is not met kindly by the crowd. He announces they are going to have a roster shakeup next week on Monday Night Raw, where it's not a draft. They didn't call it a draft. They're calling it a shakeup. And then introduces the new general manager of Raw. And he says, you remember him from the Hall of Fame induction on Friday. Teddy Long's music hits. He comes out onto the stage and dances. And
awesome.
Vince McMahon lets him know that he is not the new GM. To which,
that's awesome.
It was Teddy Long was so good there, but no, as it ends up being Kurt Angle who is announced as the GM. I was surprised that Kurt didn't talk more than he did when he came down to the ring.
He doesn't need to. There was so much on that show. You know what I really loved about that show is it seemed like the whole thing was really fast paced. It didn't seem like there was a dull moment. Everything that was longer was impactful. There was none of those dragging out crap that we're used to seeing of, all right, we got 15 minutes to fill. You just go fill 15 minutes. And Kurt Angle could have done that and been very entertaining. But just bringing him out, I'm here, walk onto the back. It was just, you don't need it. I mean, what's he going to do? Go out there and start rattling off names? That doesn't get anything accomplished. He could do, what was that when Vince bought WCW and he kept asking, throwing out names of, do we want him? Do we want him? Do we want him? He could have done that. They don't need any of that stuff. Just short and sweet. He's going to get plenty of time next week with whatever the heck they're going to do.
True. Yeah, that's and he was involved in some funny backstage skits throughout the evening Sami Zayn, with Enzo and Cass, and another thing that we'll get to as well. But the New Day comes out next, and the New Day comes out, cuts a little promo, and once they are finished talking, new music on Monday Night Raw hits. The crowd goes crazy because, John, one of your favorite, and I'll let you talk this one up, The Revival debuts on Monday Night Raw.
These guys are so good. For those of you who haven't watched NXT, which I'd be surprised if anybody listening to this doesn't watch NXT, you can make a legitimate case they're the best tag team on any of the three shows and have been for a good year and a half. I love watching these guys work. And if you're an old school guy who loves teams like Arn and Tully, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, if you like that style of wrestling, you know, their little tag, their little slogan is no flips, just fists. That's all they are. They don't do any of that acrobatic crap. They just go in there and they beat the hell out of you, and they know how to wrestle. They know how to work, and they know how to tell a story in the ring, and they are going to be a huge breath of fresh air into the tag division. I'm so excited to see them up there, but at the same time, I'm disappointed because watching them and DIY and the Authors of Pain go at it on a consistent basis, which they did on Saturday in NXT at TakeOver, I'm going to miss those matches. I just hope they get to do the same stuff up on the main roster. You haven't, and you know what? You haven't seen them enough to appreciate them yet, Joe, I don't think.
No, I'm not after Monday and Tuesday and sometimes Sundays, I just don't watch enough NXT as much as I should, but I do catch all the takeovers that they do. So I'm hit and miss when it comes to watching NXT, but I was familiar with this tag team and how good they were. Just quickly moving past, we had a 6-woman tag match. Emma re-debuts in the badass Emma character. I'm not sure how she is able to keep the gloves on her hand when she walks down because they really just cover her fingers. But she is back now in a heel mode. The teams were Sasha Banks, Bayley, and Dana Brooke against Charlotte, Nia Jax, and Emma. And Sasha got Charlotte to tap to the bank statement, right? Yeah, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Charlotte taps out or gets defeated 2 days in a row.
Has there ever been a longer, more drawn-out build to a character change that never happened? Like Emelina?
I'm thinking.
Which we got to see.
You remember? Were you watching when the Funkasaurus?
No.
Debuted. It was.
What the hell was that?
What is his name now? It's Brodus Clay.
Yes, I know him.
Yes, I can't remember. I don't know what he goes by in TNA now. Just a big, massive dude, and they had him talking him up, debuting. It was going to be this big thing. And then he came out to, like, Flash Funk's music with the Funkadactyls. And people just kind of looked at it like, what in the world did I just watch? And, yeah. So that one was odd because they kept pushing it back. And it ended up being a joke on the screen. Like John Laurinaitis, when he was the GM, would just call him and be like, "Hey, Brodus, we'll get you on next week. We'll get you on next week," and it just was never going to happen. But yeah, Emma is now back. Never really debuted as Emelina. Following that, the new Universal Champion Brock Lesnar comes out. Paul Heyman grabs the mic, and Paul Heyman kind of runs a little bit through the roster and teases who could be an opponent for Brock Lesnar. I wonder when we will see Brock Lesnar again, because he teased Seth Rollins, he teased Kevin Owens, he teased both Matt and Jeff Hardy, and then he got to Roman Reigns, talking about how both Roman and Brock were the only two to ever beat The Undertaker, and maybe they should have a match next. And then you hear the roar, and Braun Strowman walks down to the ring to have a face-off with Brock, but the two never do anything.
Correct. I don't know how long Brock goes away. I would imagine he goes away for a little while. I would love to see. I think Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns going at it for a month or two would be absolutely wonderful. At some point, you're going to get Brock and Roman again, and at some point, you're going to get Brock and Braun. And what I would really, really love to see is them, that be just day one of what's going to be close to a 12-month build for Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar, and to consistently tease it. And let it headline WrestleMania next year. And
they,
I think it would be awesome.
They did mention that Brock Lesnar still owes Seth Rollins. If Seth Rollins was the last person to defeat Brock Lesnar for the title, that happened at WrestleMania 31. And right here in St. Louis, the two actually had their rematch at Battleground in a match that was, as Brock was about to win, had the one, had the two, and then the gong hit, the lights went out, Undertaker was in the ring, and beat up Brock Lesnar. So the two have actually never had a match that finished Although the one match they had, Brock absolutely dominated him in St. Louis on that pay-per-view. So they gave some teases for that.
Yeah, there was something like 16 suplexes, if I remember, in that match.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was not a close match at all. So, yeah, Braun just walks away. No punches thrown, nothing. I don't know when we will see Brock Lesnar again. I think the next pay-per-view is April 30th. So I don't know if Brock will even be back for that. After that, Chris Jericho is backstage giving an interview. I don't know the two dark-haired girls part. I know one's name is Kat. The other one, I'm not sure what the other one's name is. Was interviewing with them. He did all of his bits, made the crowd laugh, got the crowd behind him, and then was jumped by both Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens prior to the main event that was supposed to be, that we haven't even mentioned yet, Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe against Seth Rollins and Chris Jericho. So he gets jumped, and I would say written off TV for several months so he can go on tour.
Yeah, because Fozzy's coming to town, and Fozzy's going on tour in May. So Chris will be gone for the summer, and that was a perfect way to do it. And we were wondering when Finn Balor was going to be introduced into the whole thing as time was going on, and at that moment it was like, oh. Well, there's a perfect spot.
Yeah, after the commercial break, Seth was standing outside of the medic's door. Kurt Angle walks out and says that Chris Jericho won't be able to wrestle for a very long time. And he said, I will have to find you a partner. And we find out who that partner is later on in the main event. Before we get to the main event, though, two more matches. A number one contenders match between Enzo and Cass and Sheamus and Cesaro. That match won by Sheamus and Cesaro. So we're going to keep those two as a tag team, it looks like. And I wonder if Enzo and Cass start making their way to SmackDown.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit. But, yeah, I am very curious to see who's going to go where and how this is going to shake out. Because I expect there to be all kinds of moving around whenever this shakeup, however in the world they're going to do it, is. But, yeah, that would be fine. Very, very few guys that I would be disappointed if they change shows. Whatever's best for them to elevate themselves, I'm in favor of.
The other match that happened was Sami Zayn against Jinder Mahal, and one night after being the second or the final person eliminated, Jinder Mahal comes up short to Sami Zayn. Sami gets the win in that. Sami, another one that could probably use a reset on his character. Yeah, so. Those were the two before the main event. So we get the bad guys first. Kevin Owens comes out. Samoa Joe comes out. Following that, Seth Rollins' music hits. And then we sit and we await. As music hits, the smoke comes over the arena. And Finn Balor, the Demon King, makes his return.
Oh, God, can we stop calling? I'm so sick and tired of names. These little marketing names. We've got the Demon King, we've got the Lone Wolf, we've got Samoa Joe as the Destroyer, for God's sakes. Just call them by their dumb names.
Seth Rollins is now the Kingslayer, John. He's now known as the Kingslayer, yeah.
Yeah, Seth freaking Rollins, the Kingslayer. Whatever we can put on a t-shirt, that's what we're going to try and do. But the Demon King, which sounds like Demon Kane every time he says it, I am so happy they didn't have him do the dang entrance. I was terrified that they were going to have him do the entrance on Raw. That is a pay-per-view only. Pay to see the Finn's Demon entrance. You can even just put it on the big pay-per-views as far as I'm concerned. I love the way that he came out.
I'm going to wait to bring up a question about the pairing between Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, but first, I don't understand how a wrestler can take Finn Balor's finisher. I don't see how that feels, like how that can be taken without getting just really, really hurt.
I've thought that since day one. Every time I see somebody with a finish for the first time, I'm like, okay, is everyone going to take that, and can you do it to everyone? Because otherwise it's useless if you can't do it to everyone. And I know, I'm with you. There's got to be a trick. The man's been doing it for, what, 20 years? 15 years? He knows how to do it. He's pretty good. And I've not heard one guy get hurt, at least in his time from NXT into his, what, one day in WWE.
That's one. When NXT comes to town at the end of the month and they give us somebody in studio, I'm going to have to ask that. So,
well, if you get one of the women on, we ask them what it's like to take Ember Moon's finisher, because how no one's broken a neck on that thing. That's more dangerous than Finn's.
Right. Ugh. So that's how Raw ends. It ends with Seth Rollins and Finn Balor celebrating in the middle of the ring, wondering what's going to happen next week at the Raw shakeup. So that being said, we move on to SmackDown, and Randy Orton, St. Louis's own, the new champion, starts off the show. He comes in, and after talking for just a little bit, Bray Wyatt comes on the screen. Bray Wyatt says that he is going to ask for his rematch at the next pay-per-view. Says it's going to be a House of Horrors match where he wants Randy to face all of his fears in said match. Randy tells him to come fight now. Lights go out. Bray is standing behind Randy Orton, and the two of them begin fighting until Randy gets the upper hand, and Eric Rowan finally makes his return with a more demented sheet mask than before, and the two of them gain up on Randy Orton until Luke Harper comes down to make the save on the man that he wanted out of the Wyatt family from day one. And we get our matchup for the main event for SmackDown, which will be the Bray and Eric Rowan, the only two members of the Wyatt family currently, and Luke Harper and Randy Orton. So, John, I ask you this. More odd of a pairing, Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, since Seth Rollins is the one that injured Finn Balor and put him on the shelf, causing him to drop the title and miss several months of action, or Luke Harper and Randy Orton, who hated each other in the Wyatt family and have nothing, in common besides a common enemy?
Yeah, when you have a common enemy, then that's all that you need. You can put aside your differences if you hate the other guy enough. The Rollins and Balor thing was just bizarre, and it wasn't even addressed until afterwards, really. Everything was fine until the end, and then they looked at each other like, oh, okay, yeah, you destroyed my moment, but we're cool. Very strange.
At least we beat these guys that I fought with in NXT.
Right. What was really cool, though, about that match...
Didn't Finn beat... who beat Seth Rollins for the title in NXT?
I don't know.
Would that have been Neville or Bo Dallas?
I don't know if Bo got it from him or if somebody got it between Rollins and Bo. Bo lost to Neville. And then Neville lost to...
Finn,
Sammy.
Right?
Sammy. Sammy Zayn.
Okay.
Sammy lost to Owens. Then Owens lost to Finn. Finn lost to Joe. Joe lost to Nakamura.
Okay.
Wow, how'd I remember? I got all that right, I think. Pretty close. It was really, really cool, though, when you look at all those guys that were in that ring and the NXT in that Raw main event and the NXT championships that were in that ring. It was all of them. It was really, really cool. That's never happened before.
Yeah, no,
a whole ring of all NXT champions. That's a pretty neat moment.
All guys, too, that were huge in Ring of Honor as well.
That's true. Big moment for them as well.
Tyler Black and Kevin Steen and Samoa Joe and I'm drawing a blank on what Finn Balor's...
Oh, Generico. Oh, no, wait, that's Sami Zayn. No, Finn was not in Ring of Honor.
Was he not? He was just in Japan. Yeah,
he was in Japan.
He had a weird name, too. It's like started with an F, I think. Still started with an F.
Fergal Devitt, that's his
yes.
name.
Yes, yes, yeah. You sure he's ever in Ring... Was he never in Ring of Honor?
No, I don't believe so.
So that was, that was a cool moment. Kind of shows the, you know, the changing of the guard. Like, yeah, you're still going to have Triple H, you're still going to have Brock Lesnar at WrestleManias, but these are kind of your stars now.
Yeah, no, it was very cool.
So as Raw or SmackDown goes on, we get a rematch, or I guess Alexa Bliss gets her rematch against Naomi. Naomi wins that and keeps the women's title. I got to say, we'll get to it. I'll ask for two people at the end of the show, at the end of the podcast here, that you think will be shook up next Monday. But, yeah, I think Alexa Bliss might be one of those as well. And then, John, you're probably – I don't know if this is your first or your second favorite part of the week of Monday and Tuesday's shows, but Ty Dillinger, the Perfect 10, makes his debut against Curt Hawkins.
In that place, Road Warrior popped, Austin popped. That was unbelievable. I don't know that that's – he's very, very, very unique in a lot of ways. One, he's a guy who was fired and they brought back. He's an older guy. What did we say? He was like 36,
mm-hmm.
37. He's an older guy. But he was fired. They brought him back. He was on the verge of being nothing. He was losing every match. He was just a guy, just basically an enhancement guy almost. And he came up with this perfect 10 gimmick and brought it out the first time, and it was goofy because it's here's a guy who doesn't beat anybody, and he does one move, and then he flashes these 10s saying his move was a perfect 10. And it caught on, and it caught on, and he barely wins. But he's as over as anybody down in NXT. And he lost it. He loses constantly. And when he came out at the Rumble, the place blew up. And when he came out last night on SmackDown on Tuesday, that place exploded. And they didn't. And that was a noise that it was him and Nakamura who had the biggest pops probably of anybody those on Monday or on Tuesday.
Yeah, that was that happened next. It was teased all night that Miz and Maurice were going to call out John Cena and Nikki Bella. The John Cena's music hits, and it is Miz dressed as John Cena, Maurice dressed as Nikki Bella, doing a really good impression. Like, they were so bad, awesome. They were good. And they come out, they run down the newly engaged couple, and then as they are about to leave the ring, a gentleman playing a violin is currently seen on the ramp. And as soon as you hear the violin, as soon as you see, you know exactly who it is, you know exactly what it's going to be, but until the music actually hit, and they showed on the Titantron the video, that place went bonkers.
Has anybody gotten an entrance like that for their debut where they get a violinist?
I can't recall a violinist. I mean Chris Jericho got a countdown.
Jericho's was pretty good because he had like a 1 month countdown. And then had that moment with The Rock in the ring. But I don't know that there are, and again, I didn't watch for a handful of years between the end of the Attitude Era and about 4 or 5 years ago. But any time during that, I don't remember anybody getting that kind of pomp and circumstance for their first time appearing on television. And it was awesome. And it was strange because all it was Nakamura came out. He did his whole entrance with the whole gimmick in the ring. And that was it. And Miz and Maurice just left. Just walked out. Nothing. It was very odd. But it also made me think that's the final time you're going to see him on a Tuesday night.
I do disagree with that. I disagree with that, but we'll get into it in just a second. Fine. Next up, you have a street fight. The title was not on the line. Dean Ambrose against Baron Corbin. I guess we're going to continue this feud that didn't even make the main WrestleMania card.
It was better. This match was a lot better. And the pace was better. I don't know. Now that I look back at both of them, I wonder if they were cut. Because they were up against the top of the hour, up against the beginning of the show, at the end of the pre-show, and it seemed like it was fast and very uninspiring. This one on Tuesday night was a lot better. It was much more entertaining. It was much more. It was paced better. I like Baron Corbin. I think Dean could use a refresh. I mean, Dean's just kind of been there. I was a huge Dean fan at the beginning, but it's just kind of worn me out. But I love Baron Corbin. I want to see him get more and more opportunities. He's still very young in the business, but he's got this. He's like a legitimate real-life heel. He's like, he doesn't like people. He's a jerk. And everything that he is on television, that's like what he really is.
I don't know. At the Hall of Fame, Baron Corbin was talking about how great his golf game was. And that's fine. So out of character.
Yeah, but he can play. Jerks play golf.
Okay.
There's plenty of jerks who play golf.
All right. I mean, you played for quite some time.
I play golf back before I got surgeries all the time. I used to play golf when I was healthy.
I don't understand the next segment. I mean, I know you had to get them both on the card. You had to get them on the show. But Shane McMahon coming out to talk about the shakeup. And then AJ Styles comes out just to basically shake his hand and tell him, good job.
And that he wanted to stay on SmackDown. Because the thought is that AJ, everybody's expectation is that AJ's going to Raw. Because AJ's going to go and carry the big show.
Right.
And be the number one guy, be the guy on top on tour. Because without the belt touring, they need somebody who's going to headline all these house shows, all these live events around the country. Now, before it was Kevin Owens headlining it as the Universal Champion. And then you had whomever it was, the various guys who had the belts on the SmackDown side. You've got to have a headliner who's going to sell tickets. So that would be my expectation. I thought it was great that he came out there. You had to have Shane address it. You can't have him not come out there after Vince did what he did. How good is Shane at selling, by the way? Still selling the ass kicking from Sunday. It was beautiful.
Oh, he's always been good at that. Yeah.
God, is he good. He is very talented, no matter how down I was on what happened, that the match on Sunday existed. The man is such a super talent.
And then to end the night, you had the tag team match that saw Randy Orton and Luke Harper go over the former champion Bray Wyatt and the other member of the Wyatt family, Eric Rowan. The match, you make the champion continue to look strong. At some point, I mean, Bray Wyatt, I don't see him as just a lone character. He needs multiple people with him, I think, at all times. Cult leader. He needs members around him.
I don't know that he needs to have people around him. I don't understand what the point of the end of that match was. It was just weird. Like, what? Okay, the lights go out, and then Bray's just sitting on a ramp, and Rowan takes an RKO. Which, but if we could keep Harper and Orton together, a super kick into an RKO is a sweet tag team finish. That is really cool. But it was just bizarre. I don't know what got over. What was that trying to get across? What were they trying to do?
I don't understand so much of what they were doing at the end there. And Luke Harper, if he goes to Raw, maybe you send him there and he kind of can go off on his own, because I think he's a hell of a performer and he's a big guy like Vince likes. So maybe you could turn that into something. I don't get it. And yeah, I mean, you had the worms, the maggots, the cockroaches on Sunday. You have the lights turning off and Bray vanishing to a different part of the arena on Tuesday, but he's still losing. It's like they're right back into old Bray Wyatt.
I don't get that. I don't know why he keeps losing. Has he won a match at WrestleMania? I don't think he's won anything at WrestleMania.
His
singles he's lost.
Did he not beat Cena?
No, he did not beat Cena.
So Cena beat
that
him.
That was the Yeah, that was the one where he put he fell in a case and they put a speaker on top of him or a rack on top of it and counted that had the 10 count.
I don't remember. I know
lost to Undertaker.
I know. Yeah, he lost to Undertaker and then he lost to Orton. He never wins at pay per views.
No, and I don't understand. I mean, how bizarre is it? You have a guy who just his music hits, and 10 to 20,000, or on Sunday, 75,000 cell phones go in the air for his entrance. And this has been going on since a couple of months after they debuted. How much more into a guy does a fan base have to get? And he got his belt, that's great, but it's like, okay, well, 2 weeks later, we're just going to take that back. And he pins Cena to get it.
Right.
He pins the guy.
Twice.
All right, this is, yeah, that's right. This is the time. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Unless they think that he can't sell tickets and he can't headline those shows on top as the champion. I don't know. I think he can. He's very entertaining. He's very, very entertaining to watch in the ring.
Until you've seen his entrance live, you don't understand just how into it everybody is.
It's awesome. I don't get it. No explanation will make any sense.
So those were the five hours of live programming, Monday and Tuesday. So John, coming up on Monday, we have the shakeup. Give me two people that you for sure think are moving.
Oh, that I for sure think that are moving. I don't know that there are two for sure that I think Nakamura goes to Raw, mainly because what they brought him out not to start anything, almost as though they saved him for Tuesday because they didn't want to put everybody on Monday. I like your idea of Enzo and Cass going over to Raw. More than anything, what I want to see as much as anything is I would love to see them divvy up the talent more equally. Stop treating SmackDown like it's an inferior show and Raw is the more important one. I think it hurts both shows. More it hurts Raw because all you have are these top-end talents. You need other guys on that show for them to work with. SmackDown works because there's such a variety of guys. And you have mid-card lower guys on the card, guys who don't work every week, and you've got a handful of top end talent. And it, to me, it plays out more. You could have more entertaining matches where you're going to have a lot of, no finish, DQ, that kind of junk happen more on Raw because you have the top guys, and especially with the women. The women need to be divvied up better. I don't want Alexa Bliss to go up there. I like her being on SmackDown and being the top. She's as good a heel as they have in either side, women or men. And it's kind of sad that her and Charlotte are probably the two best heels in the entire company, because they're really the only two who don't care about anybody. They're not trying to sell merch. They're not trying to be cool. They're just trying to be hated, and they both are. And I more than anything, I want the women to be spread out more.
One name that I for sure think is going to move, I think we'll see Rusev move from Raw to SmackDown.
I'm with you on that.
And here's
another guy. God, how many times does he have to do something spectacular? Every time he gets close, and they're like, yep, back of the line. He had a tank at WrestleMania. He had a tank 2 years ago. A tank. And did he do anything on Sunday?
No, I don't even know if I saw him in the.
I don't know if he's hurt, but he wasn't in the Battle Royal or anything, I don't believe.
I don't remember seeing him in the Battle Royal. Yeah.
He had that heat, and I know he probably got put in timeout because of the Lana thing, because of the engagement becoming public and all of that. But he's on Total Divas now, so it doesn't matter. None of that stuff should matter. And maybe he's being held out because they're going to move him to SmackDown, but that man should be working on top. He should be working at the top of the card on a consistent basis. He's super entertaining. His mic stuff has gotten so much better, and he's got personality that they're letting him show now. It would be a great opportunity for him to finally get to a better place. Although we thought the same with Bray, and he only got there for like a week.
The other one I would put in, I would think, I think Sami Zayn also is going to get moved too. So I'm trying to think who goes from SmackDown over to Raw, and maybe you throw Miz there. Maybe that is where you put Miz, because he's been doing such great work on SmackDown. But God, he's been so good. You got to keep him there, right?
No, you can move him over. I think they move more of the mid-card people there, and then maybe one of the top-end guys. Maybe move Dean over there and get the three Shield guys back in that same in the same brand.
Yeah, we will see on Monday. John, it's a lot easier to do 3 hours of Raw and 2 hours of SmackDown than it is 7 hours of WrestleMania.
That it is, and now we can take a few days off and recharge.
Yes, absolutely. So we will check in again next Wednesday. As always, your feedback is welcome, as hopefully the audio issues sound a whole lot better as we continue this Going Overtime podcast, talking wrestling with you, giving some recaps to the shows that we watch. So, John, I will talk. We will talk again, talk a little wrestling next Wednesday.
Very good, Joe. Thank you very much.
Thank you.